The phrase, better the devil you know, is a shortened version of the old proverb, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. The saying has its roots in a 1539 collection of Latin proverbs compiled by the Bible translator Richard Taverner. The full saying, as we know it today, first appeared in Anthony Trollope's 1857 novel, Barchester. And the idea is straightforward. The saying is used to indicate that it might be better to deal with a difficult person or situation one knows than a new person or new situation that one doesn't know, or could be far worse. Paul Tillich takes up the concept in his book, The Courage to Be. There he makes a distinction between fear and worry or anxiety. Fear has a definite object, a bear, a big test, a scary diagnosis. Fears, Tillich argues, can be faced and attacked or conquered or endured largely because we know what we're dealing with and we can make plans accordingly. Anxiety or worry, on the other hand, are different. They have no object, but are concerned with all the possible misfortunes that might befall us at any moment. Tillich is most concerned about anxiety and worry because they are missing the tangible thing to act first. In his words, therefore, participation, struggle, and love with respect to anxiety and worry are nearly impossible. Practically, I guess I think of it this way. I can fear a bear that's standing in front of me when I walk through the woods. It's big and it can obviously hurt me. But I can also learn about how to deal with bears and act accordingly if I ever encounter one. On the other hand, I have anxiety and worry about walking in the woods at night. It's dark and I can't see, and who knows what evils might befall me. And because I don't know what is waiting for me or what's behind those reflective eyes, I cannot prepare for it or confront it. Without a clear definition of object, anxiety and worry are expressed through feelings like powerlessness, negation, and ultimately resignation. We simply cease to go out into the world or engage in the world because of what dangers might befall us. Origen of Alexandria, the late 2nd and early 3rd century Christian writer, once said that our life is a night, kind of marking this idea that life has feelings of uncertainty and anxiety and worry that we all feel now and again, simply as part of it. Now, the topic of worry and the theme of night are central to chapter 12 of Luke's gospel, which is our gospel reading today. At the beginning of the chapter, a large crowd has gathered around Jesus and his disciples. And so Jesus begins a series of teachings. And likely what we're witnessing here in this chapter and in the chapters to come is how speeches or these conversations with a huge crowd would have taken place during Jesus' time. You know, what do you do when you're trying to talk to 1,000 people but you don't have a microphone or you're not in an amphitheater? Well, you tell a couple of people close to you, or you speak as loudly as you can, and those in earshot turn around and then repeat what they heard out to the next set of folks. And it keeps going like this and this and this, almost like the telephone game on a mass scale. But that's how speeches and conversations were had in large groups during this time. In chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, we have an example of one of these short messages. You had to keep it short so people could remember. Here, 13 through 21 is the parable of the rich fool, which is the story that we had last Sunday. And verses 22 through 34 begins a separate teaching about worry. And verses 35 through 39, there's a conversation or teaching about watchfulness. Here in our passage this morning, we only get the exhortation from Jesus' talk about worry. He says, don't be afraid. Sell everything you have and give alms and place your treasure in heaven and not in material things. I think the real meat of the teaching happens a little bit earlier. He says, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food and your body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouses nor barns, and yet God feeds them. Or how much more valuable are you than the birds? And can any of you worry by worrying at a single hair to your head? If then you are not able to do so small a thing as that, why do you worry about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon, in all of his glory, was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothed the grasses of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying. For it is the nations of the world that strive after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, strive for his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. I think it's one of the more beautiful sayings of Jesus, and certainly one of the more memorable ones. In the end, I think is great. Do not worry or feel powerless or resignation about the basic things in life, because God knows that you need them, and God provides. And that idea, God knows what we need and provides for our needs, is certainly a reassuring idea. And perhaps one of the core articles of our Christian faith. This is something we believe. And then we get to this other story, this story about watchfulness. Here, the master of a house. And here, in this story, we're really kind of thrown into another culture. The master of a house had a large household with many servants, and those servants would have lived at the house. They would have worked fields and have been domestic servants, some slaves, some free, all living on the estate. So the master has gone out of town for a week or maybe more to attend a wedding. Wedding celebrations could last a week or more during Jesus' time, so it was a really big deal. And probably by the end of a celebration like that, you would feel rested and happy and jovial. Jesus calls on the crowd to be ready for action, like the servants of the master who has gone away for a wedding celebration and could return at any moment, even at night, but in a festive mood. That master, happy from the events that he or she have experienced, and seeing that the servants have eagerly awaited the return, Master will spread the wealth, so to speak, offering the servants rest and share in the celebration as well. The idea so far is this, that we do not worry and that we are called to be watchful. And by being watchful, we will somehow be rewarded. But what does being watchful have to do with not worrying? And what does being watchful as a practice of faith even look like? In our world where patience is in short supply, to be watchful feels almost countercultural. When what is to be known is always there, as Barry says, when what we need is to be revealed, what we need to be revealed will be revealed in its own time, as if by chance, means we have to slow down a little bit. What if the best parts of life actually look more like this? Less chasing and more watching, less hurry, better action. But I think that's the thing about anxiety and worry. They make us chase, they make us hurry, and sometimes without direction. Our life is a night, after all. And how can we be watchful if we can't see anything in front of our faces? One of my favorite people, Wisława Szymborska, writes this beautiful piece about the terrors of night in her book, Non-Required Reading. She says, "Silent night, peaceful night, night that envelops the whole world in sleep. The naturalist who stumbles upon such phrases smiles in pity. Ah, poets, poets. They glide across a landscape surface, a momentary mood, a fleeting impression suits them just fine. Since night isn't really silent or peaceful anywhere, with the exception of the lands of eternal ice, where there is absolutely nothing to hunt and no one to do the hunting. Its envelopes only a fraction of all living things in sleep. The more than 4,000 species of mammals, nearly 70% do their hunting at night. To say nothing of the many reptiles, amphibians, insects, and birds who emerge from their diurnal hiding places only after nightfall. Thus, nocturnal silence is made up of rustling, growling, splashing, slurping, whirling, rattling, fluttering, chattering, and squeaking, not to mention all the sounds that our ears don't pick up. Various fruitive assassinations are carried out in this soundtrack. Their victims include birds and their eggs, frogs and their polywogs, moths and their larvae, lizards, snails, fish, grasshoppers, crustaceans, all sorts of small mammals, and the offspring of large animals. In warmer regions where the predators include boa constrictors, jaguars, and alligators, even huge animals aren't safe. Someone will remind me that herbaceous animals also go out scouting for meals at dusk, which slightly softens the nightmare of a wholesale slaughterhouse. But enough complaining," she continues. "It's time for a joke. Your honor," cries the lawyer in his plea, "my worthy opponent delights in tarring my defendants with all the worst possible failings. Yesterday he accused one citizen of having the unmitigated gall to commit his robbery in broad daylight. Today he accused another guy of shameless underhandedness since he pulled off his heist at night. So I ask you, Your Honor, just when are my clients supposed to do their stealing?" The full quote from Origin of Alexandria goes like this. Since our life is a night, we need a lamp, which is our understanding, the eye of our soul. There's certainly enough to be worried about today. We're worn out and fearful because of our country's inability to address the epidemic of mass shootings. We're worn out and defensive because of the heightened partisanship in politics, where speaking the truth to power or stating facts like climate change is actually happening or our country continues to separate parents from their children at the border is met with either resignation that what can we even do about this stuff, or is written off because it's part of some political agenda. Our life is a night, and it certainly seems that we are going through a time where there is more darkness in the world than usual. But you know what? That's pretty normal. The world has had its fair share of dark times, and so have each of us in our lives. And besides, Christians, followers of Jesus Christ, have a lamp that lights up especially during those difficult times. The lamp of Jesus' teachings and our scriptures that reveal to us what good living looks like, what it means to show love to those around us and those that we may never meet. The light that comes from God's Holy Spirit constantly at work in and through us, reminding us that we are never alone in the darkness. In the light of a gathered community that works together to make some aspect of the world a little bit brighter. This light is bright enough to cast out at least a little bit of darkness. May this light and our light shine on those people and places that are around us. May we not grow discouraged about the darkness, for our God continues to shed light and truth in this world, even and especially today. Amen.